Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed. I'm Ken Napsack.
I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, and we are back for a new episode all about news. I was going to say another, but it's new. It's new, and it's another. It's both. Things can be two things, guys. Anyway, this is going to be our episode all about the Star Wars news, some audience questions, and Jedi Temple Challenge. Are you ready to be challenged, Ken?
I am ready to be challenged by Star Wars. And we always would remind you today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial. Free trial at audibletrial.com/4center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. A little bit later, as always, we'll have our 4Center recommends an audiobook we think you should try out on us. Help the show and help your ears get a Star Wars story. We're going to catch up ourselves. This is Joseph and I are friends. We've been friends for years. We catch up via podcast. except for when we can hang out in hotel bars. Life adventures, Star Wars adventures, or are they all intertwined as they often seem to be?
Oh, they are all intertwined. Lots of life and career adventures this week. So lots of busy stuff. This was a fun week where a lot of my Star Wars adventures were, you know, reading the book that we're going to talk about on Thursday, Queen's Peril. I think I looked at some action figures online just to make myself happy. I mean, that was a ton of fun. But I think the thing where Star Wars was on my mind the most is I had this extremely, as many people did, different 4th of July than normal. I think most people had a much different 4th of July. But I've been performing at this convention that I mention often in Minnesota, Convergence, for, I'll just go ahead and say it, decades. Because it's literally crossed the line to decades. You know, first one was 99, the year Phantom Menace came out, and we did a Star Wars sketch, and that was still back in the day when Star Wars sketches, you could only do at conventions, because if you did them at a comedy theater, people would just say, what are you talking about and why? So it was weird to not have that convention the 4th of July weekend and have, you know, this different world we're living in. So what I ended up doing is my wife and I watched an episode of Doctor Who in the morning that was about the French Revolution. And then the afternoon, I finished reading Queen's Peril, all about, you know, the Battle of Naboo and keeping freedom for Naboo and all very political. And then in the evening, we watched Hamilton, which is, of course, about the American Revolution, while also mentioning the French Revolution. And it was just like it was a great day for me to celebrate all the ideas in Star Wars that are political and are about the idea of we can make a change. Revolution is possible. And I'm not calling for any armed, violent revolution. I'm just saying the thematic ideas of revolution.
We do have to clarify sometimes. That's great. That's great. All rolled into one. If only Lin-Manuel Miranda could have dropped Jedi Jabba Flow into Hamilton.
That would be great.
Well, that's a good weekend. That's a good fourth.
Yeah. It was very, you know, I'm sure there were a lot of fireworks where you were, but all, you know, 2 hours and 40 minutes of Hamilton, there are also fireworks going on. So it was the most connected I've ever felt to the concept of this is a celebration of revolution.
It was, yeah, a lot of fireworks all over the world. More than normal, yep. I love all the theories and conspiracies behind it, but the end result is scared dogs. That was our fourth as well.
What did you obviously stick around the house probably for the fourth, but what did you do?
We did there's kind of a phrase or term people have been using, like kind of like potting up with, like there's people in your life who like we're not affected, we're close enough or what, you know, like like our friend Joe Starr, he's like our upstairs neighbors, we're like we're either going to catch together or not have it together, you know, like so Grace and her sister and her brother-in-law and myself had a quiet fourth, you know, safe as we can be and no fireworks or anything, but we were supposed to watch Hamilton. It was like on the docket, like it was food, drink, Hamilton, and somehow we got stuck on the new rebooted Unsolved Mysteries. And you know, first of all, like I don't audition for much things, but I at one point over last year I had auditioned for the new Robert Stack of that show.
It's a like the voiceover or the on-camera host?
Well, it was an on-camera thing. They don't have that, so they at some point jettisoned from the thing, and it's just like a documentary thing. And they're interesting stuff, but they're downer stuff. There's a lot of it's murder, right? Horrific murder. Grace loves true crime, and I get it. I get the obsession with it. I get the fascination and the lessons learned from it. All those kind. I get it. But the fifth one, mind you, was a UFO one. And I'm like, I want to get to that one. So I just kept kind of inching us forward as a group to the UFO one, which we did get to, which is an alleged UFO abduction, multi-abduction case in Berkshire, Massachusetts in 1969. Me and Dave Foley would be very interested in it. So all of a sudden the night ended and we went home and we were like, oh, wait, we're supposed to watch Hamilton. But then Grace and I have been binging Curb Your Enthusiasm, and I've forgotten season 9, Lin-Manuel Miranda is in many episodes. So, hey, you know, we kind of felt we watched part of it, I guess.
Yeah. Well, here's what I think you should do for your household. I think that you should edit the opening themes to Unsolved Mysteries to the beginning of Hamilton and just watch it like it's a big episode of Unsolved Mysteries.
There you go. That'll work. Then the other thing I did, I you know, again, proving that Joseph and I are Star Wars fans and we do this show and we're racing towards 800 total episodes. We do it really out of love first. I just started rewatching the Director and the Jedi documentary. About halfway through that. And just it's still so fascinating and how honest to me that they dealt with some of the stuff Mark Hamill thought, at least at the beginning of the production, and maybe still thinks on some level. It's pretty fascinating. And then I started rewatching The Phantom Menace because of we're covering Queen's Peril on Thursday, which goes up and into that movie. And I keep telling you, I have these little Phantom Menace revelations where even though I've seen this movie, it's been in my life for over 20 years. For some reason, I'm picking out little things every now and then that I've never paid attention to. The Rats Tyrell family vacation recently. Ben Quadanero's checking out his ship in the hangar. In the rescue scene, in the beginning of the Battle of Naboo, when Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon and everyone free the pilots, I've never focused on because I've clearly seen it. It's not like a hidden Easter egg. But the first pilot in that, the he's down right on your screen. He does the best. He's sitting down, hands over his knees. Obi-Wan is above him, slashing a droid in half. And this guy, this performer, this day player, this extra, just kind of looks up like, huh, is that a breeze? And he ducks. Clearly ducking because, you know, an assistant director yelled, duck. And and he can't see what he's ducking. You know, they're not in the volume. And I watched it like three or four times. And I'm not saying it was bad. Like, he was like horrible. It's so hilariously underplayed in the scene. It's just like, we've been held capture. All right, Jedi got me out. And I recommend anyone checking it out.
I might check it out when we're done recording. I love those moments where he's just like, Jedi cutting down a B1 battle droid? I've seen it.
Yeah.
Meh.
And he does duck to defend him. He like makes it a duck, but clearly it's like he's ducking a tennis ball is flown over his head. I'm not criticizing the way George shot that movie. I'm just saying it popped in my head. I've never, 21 years, never paid attention to it.
That is so great to find all those hidden little details.
There is our Star Wars and life adventures. And now on to the news. We'll get the cues later. We got the news now. This one, Joseph, dropped right after you and I published our episode last Tuesday, because that's the way of it. It's become a running joke. And you know what? Even when we would do Jedi Council live on a Thursday, we would get off air and news would drop. It's just the way of it. Just the way of it. We got this story from StarWars.com, the number one source for legitimate Star Wars news, the Mandalorian publishing plan. That's right. This is probably something that was going to be announced at Celebration. It just has that kind of feel to it. There you go. I'm trying to refresh my page. There it is. So we've got a ton of Mandalorian books, visual guides, and for me personally, I'm really excited. The art of Phil Sosak and his team. On season one, the art of season one. I'll just run through a little bit of list here. There's some more stuff on the way. Original novel by Adam Christopher. Ultimate visual guide by Pablo Hidalgo. Remember him? He used to be around these parts. Some children's readers books by Brooke Vital. And a junior novelization of what is the question I have? Joe Schreiber. I imagine it might just be the junior novelization of the original novel. Maybe. Or is it just a retelling of season one from the child's point of view? I don't know.
I would assume it is a junior novelization of season one because, you know, if you compress that, you know, it's not that long of a story if you compress it.
And I'd be interested. Yeah. And again, you know, original novel, that makes sense. Junior novelization, novelization usually means an adaptation of something we've seen. So, yeah, that would track. Also, we get a Mando-inspired comics coming from Marvel and IDW. No more details on that. No release date on all of these. I think Phil Sosak did tweet out something about when the Art of book comes, but this will all probably lead up into season two in October. Some promotional synergy there. So, Joseph, let's dive in. We could go anywhere you want to go. Open forum. How do we feel about this full slate of books going into season two, and what are our expectations and wants?
Yeah. I think the only dates that they were on that article was that it was starting this fall, which does line up with, you know, getting Mandalorian hype going for the premiere of season two, but then continuing into the winter and spring. So I wonder if some of this stuff is overlapping with season two or, you know, inspired by season two. Because, you know, a couple of these things are real clear of, like, this is a, you know, the season one art of, you know. But who knows, maybe that visual guide is coming out next spring and is going to, you know, be both season one and season two, that kind of thing. Right. I think my biggest overall reaction is, given that we don't have any announcement coming about what Taika Waititi's, you know, next Star Wars theatrical release would be, given that the nature of the unknown condition of the world is, I don't feel entirely confident that the Star Wars movie is coming out when they say it is.
Yeah.
So my overall biggest reaction is, for right now, The Mandalorian is the face of Star Wars. Like, there's going to be, you know, other books coming out. We know there's going to be Thrawn. High Republic's going to be a big thing in the publishing world. There are going to be video games. There's going to be lots of Star Wars. But for right now, in the cultural imagination, it's interesting to see Mandalorian really stepping up and saying, we are giving it all of the support and all of the assets that we would normally give the next round of films. And we're putting it on Mandalorian, which is, it's just an interesting way for me to think about the nature of Star Wars, because we've been having these discussions for so long of like, after the sequel trilogy, what's going to be the next big trilogy of movies? And we know we're going to get these other TV shows eventually, but they haven't even started shooting yet because of the state of the world. So it's just interesting to think that the first live action Star Wars show is not just going to be this like one-off TV show. It's going to be the face of Star Wars for a little while. Like, when you can walk into a store again and you see Star Wars stuff, it will mostly be Mandalorian stuff.
Look, I you know, I've been doing this show with you now for what, 5 years? We're in our 2015, 6 years. I don't know time anymore. you are the master at pulling out themes from Star Wars. I've learned a lot. It's influenced how I watch Star Wars and Game of Thrones, without a doubt. You've just pulled out of the theme out of the news story. You've literally done it. The theme of this news story is Mandalorian is the face of Star Wars. And that's 100% true, accurate. It's everything you're saying. This stuff might have come out anyways, you know, someone might counter, yeah, if the movie, Taika Waititi's movie hit in 2022, we're probably all getting all this. But yeah, when it was released last week and I saw the story, that was my first reaction was not that, oh, it's the face of Star Wars, but just like, oh, this is the full Monty. This is everything on the buffet for this show, which is, it deserves. And that makes a lot of sense now. And again, whether by choice or not, this is Star Wars right now, whether Favreau wants to believe it or not.
Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking, yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
No, and that's just fascinating that this little show, it's the little show that took a big technological swing and it connected with a lot of people for good reasons. And the documentary series drove that home. And now we'll get to take that series and put it in our hands. And again, not surprised that a Star Wars property is being marketed and covered by books, you know, within, not surprised, but it means more now. It definitely means more now.
Yeah. And especially as that season two, in a world where there isn't a lot, the world is going to run dry of content that was shot before the virus hit. And season two is going to be able to give Mandalorian legs for quite a long time. And I think it was driven home to me. My wife and I have been catching up on the Disney Gallery episode she hasn't seen, so we just watched the Score episode. And that's the episode where Jon Favreau has that nice little speech about like, look, we're not trying to be Star Wars. Star Wars is Star Wars, and it's over here, and we're this little offshoot. And like, yeah, no, not right now.
Yeah.
You know, to a whole generation of people, you're going to be Star Wars. You're going to be like, Jon Favreau is saying all that, and Filoni are saying all that to Ludwig about his score, but like, it's true about the show itself.
It absolutely is. And especially if you start adding in characters that we're already familiar with, even if they're characters, well, I was gonna say, even if it is the rumored Boba Fett or the rumored Ahsoka, which I'm still putting all those in the rumored category, those are big names from different eras of Star Wars. So suddenly you are connected with that and you're going to want more stories. And I'm going to want to, Wallace Shawn to star in a My Dinner with Boba Fett version of Mandalorian. I want that. By the way, I'm intrigued. One of the other options I didn't read, one of the other books coming out, is a Little Golden Book retelling of season one. And I actually love those. I've bought a few of those for my friends with kids on the way or young kids. I might buy that one. Just Baby Yoda.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's part of the marketing machine that this show organically allows itself to be, is you get all the badass cool guy vibes you want from the Mando himself, and then you know the traditional weird and cute.
Yeah.
Good old Baby Yoda's got you covered, the child. Yeah. Yeah. What are you thinking about actual content? We talked about maybe that junior novelization is just season one, but an adult book, you know what I mean? Yeah. A book marketed towards adults. This one by Adam Christopher.
Yeah.
And comics. Those are the yeah. things that we're going to end up, like the art of and the visual guide are going to be cool, but we know what those are, right?
Yeah.
But in terms of what you and I talk about, the stories, the ideas, the themes, that original adult novel in a comic books, that's where the palette is going to be expanded. What are you thinking about those?
I am intrigued by the, I'm intrigued by the comics one. I don't read the IDW stuff, not for any negative reason. I just, it's overwhelming with the comics. And I just got, at some point made that decision. I just focused on the Marvel ones. That might change over time. Maybe it's the Mando stuff. I'm intrigued because comics, though they take big swings at big themes and big characters and big moments, we've seen that, the Kylo comic, Vader, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I'd like to see the Mando, something in his past, something smaller. You could also spin it off, set up stuff with, say, Fennec Shand before that moment. You could really build out and maybe build back, backfill, build to the side, and definitely go forward and connect it with season two, or maybe it is revealed. Maybe, you know, we get a little bit of Ahsoka Tano. I don't know. But I the comics, I think you can really go small in a good way. The book.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't even know. And yeah, the description of adult novel means they're going to take episode four and just extend it a few more feet into the forest. I don't know. I really don't. It's not just about trying to keep an open mind on it. I you can really fill in some blanks. Is it young Mando? Is it the story of his, what happened when he was discovered? Something between the margins? I don't know.
Yeah.
And I don't even know what I want. The comics have more of a clearer idea on.
Yeah. I think the comics, I'm totally with you. In the fact that in the press release, they call the comics Mando inspired. That makes me think, well, maybe Marvel's just going to do a straight up Cara Dune series. And, you know, we'll start from, you know, the destruction of Alderaan and where was she then and her path through the rebellion. And, you know, that would be a great, just a Cara Dune comic. You know, it'd be great to just, hey, times where Mando isn't around, we just follow Greef Karga's, you know, bounty hunter, unit and. Mm-hmm. The guild and the tracking fobs and that bounty hunter, that little version of bounty hunter world that was introduced to us. That all makes great, great storytelling possibilities that are Mando inspired that don't touch the show. The novel is fascinating to me because I'm curious to see, obviously Favreau and Filoni's attitude is this is a playground, come on in and play. But it also feels like they have a general arc for season two and already heading into season three. So I'm curious if it's just like, this is an adventure that Mando had, or if it's, or if they're going to let somebody else tell like important connective tissue.
Yeah. Do you go through, the Siege of Mandalore stuff, part two, with the Purge, the Great Purge. Do you get any of that information? Do you want that in a novel? You know?
Yeah, and then for me, there's that, like, how much does that start to touch on the psychology of the character being shown in such a specific way in the show? Like, it's an important part of the show that we are only seeing flashes of his trauma in specific moments when it's hammer time. When it's hammer trauma time, that's when we see it. Or when he specifically chooses to open up to another character. There's a lot of storytelling choices about him revealing his deepest past. So I wonder if it is a story that I'll be like, this is fun and it fills out some stuff, but it is not absolutely core to the character. Cause my instinct is they have plans for that in the show.
Yeah. If it's all tied in, I don't know. I'm just going to keep answering. I don't know, because I was on last Tuesday again, when I saw the news, like, not surprised, but just pleasantly like, oh wow, I just kind of forgotten that this was an option and that this could still come forward. And I hadn't thought of it again. This is a different, how you view a TV show. This is why we understand the spirit of what Favreau keeps saying I think, you know, we understand it and we get it on a certain point of view. He's not wrong. This is like, it's a TV show over here. Oh, wow. We can expand this TV show universe. Oh, interesting. Didn't think about that. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely one of those ideas of like, he sees this as, these are little side characters. And like, actually we like those characters. So they're now the main characters. They're the now big deal characters. My only random guess for the novel is Mando's time with the other bounty hunters from episode 6, because that suggests like that could be a good adventure. We already got some hints that maybe he has a flirtation. We got that hint of he maybe backstabbed somebody. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of like it's a clear time in his past where he was, still an ass kicking bounty hunter and maybe had a little bit of emotional cracks, but that seems like an area that you could tell a fun story around with lots of other characters to explore as well as Mando and deliver kind of a lot of what you expect from the Mandalorian aesthetic, but not get too revealing about the big Mandalorian, you know, Siege of Mandalore, his adoption, all that.
That's a good, that'd be a good comic series, 5-parter. I like that idea.
Nice.
I like that. All right. I'll say final note for me on this. We tease Pablo over here. We love his work, though. So he's done some of his best work in the visual guides. I thought the Rise of Skywalker one, snarky at times, informative above all. And I mean snarky in a good way. You know, he just was kind of like, I'm going to answer all your questions about the sequel trilogy. But the Solo one, the Rogue One visual guide, he's got a lot of story weave through there and has a lot of fun. I think with Mando being connected to those small visual guide parts of Star Wars, I'm looking forward to what he's going to reveal in that one.
Yeah, me too. He had such great flavor and character, and I think he has such a command of the entire history of Star Wars from, expanded universe through everything that he adds, those little bits of nuance that connect, one idea back to another idea, and I'm excited for that.
Absolutely. Well said. And I'm throwing all the Force Center catchphrases into that news story. Mandalorian season 2, not that far for now, my friends. Not that far. Time has no meaning. Quick story here. Collectibles update.
I think that does have to be one of our new catchphrases. You know, the next time that I want to say well said to you, I'm just going to say time has no meaning, Ken.
Time has no meaning. I haven't showed you. Our friend Brian Ward did a Force Center catchphrase photo for you and I. Took a still frame from the animated databank brawl and put two of our catchphrases on it. I got to give that to you.
Yes, thanks, please.
Collectibles update. Lego art sets made for, quote, adults. What? I'm staring in my hand. This is what I built in my hand. The box is right here. Ages 7 through 12, Joseph, as they say, the set in French is Les Spidères de Ray. I built that this weekend.
Ooh.
My building show on Twitch. So I don't like this made for adults sales pitch, but I get it. Lego Art Star Wars The Sith building set will be released internationally August 1st, in the United States September 1st. We got 3,395 total pieces. That's a lot of pieces of Maul, Vader, and Kylo. These are like art installations you can put on your wall. Each set comes with a bespoke soundtrack. I love that phrase. This one features Doug Chang and Glenn Dillon. You can play it while you build. So my biggest question for the story, because again, this is just a collectible update. You either want it or you don't want it. You collect a lot of things in Star Wars, Joseph, but I know Lego, not by desire, like or lack of desire, just not a big Lego Star Wars collection for you, right?
No. In the world where I was exceedingly wealthy and had separate rooms for each of my Star Wars collections, I would absolutely have an entire Lego room, but no.
So this is my ever never ending quest to find out what Lego sets you would buy. Would you get these ones? Would you entertain the thought? Because you could hang them on a wall.
Yeah, you know what? I would entertain buying this, making it, and then giving it away. I did not mean to do this, but my main thought on this this story is also pulling out what I think the theme of this new story is. So here's the big picture. Here's what I think the theme is. This is not a Lego art set. This is marketed Star Wars meditation. this is a, looks like you can spend a bunch of time slowly putting, you know, over 3,000 little pieces together. You can choose to make Maul, Vader, or Kylo. You don't need to fight about who's the best. You're in your own home. You just make it. And then while you're slowly putting all these tiny pieces together, you put your earbuds in and you listen to people calmly talk about Star Wars and you have some adult alone time with Star Wars.
Oh, yes. Yes. Pour a whiskey and stare into the eyes of Maul.
Yeah. Like just the way they're advertising it of like, it's going to take you forever to put together and the pieces are too small for a child. So you have to make the children go away. And then you can just listen to Doug Chang basically do like Star Wars ASMR while you slowly, calmly build a picture of Kylo Ren, you know?
That focus on why you like the bad guy toys better. Pretty good. Final thought on this there. In terms of Star Wars art, because this is you hanging on a wall, that's art, right? I have some stuff. You definitely have some stuff. What kind of Star Wars art are you drawn to? Classic movie posters, interpretations, paintings, still frames from the movies. What you know, again, if you lived in that Naboo mansion on Theed, Theed Palace, where would you hang your Star Wars art? And what would your Star Wars art be?
Yeah, I like the posters. I've got a couple of posters. I like a little bit of more of the offbeat ones. I still need to hang it up, but I've got a print of that 1978, I believe, poster for the re-release of A New Hope. That's got it, the poster itself is posters peeling on off a wooden board, and I just love how meta it is. The ones I really like, and so does my wife, that we want to get eventually, are the ones that kind of look like they're from inside the world of Star Wars. And are basically advertisements from within the world of Star Wars, either like pitching you to travel to Endor or the propaganda ones like to join the rebellion. I really love those. They've got a real kind of 1920s, 30s WPA vibe to them. And we both like really like that aesthetic and it's Star Wars. So that's really where it works for me.
I love that. I love that. I do have some of the posters, some of the alternate posters and some fun, quirky ones. I'm drawn to our friend Joe Starr has a friend named Nan Lawson, does art. She does a lot of pop culture art and a lot of her Game of Thrones and a lot of her Star Wars stuff. Check her stuff out. It's great. It's just kind of like whimsical but poignant kind of takes on a lot of the scenes. And those are the kinds I like. But those propaganda ones work for me, too.
Then, they're beautiful. Then
it's a moral question of which one are you going to hang? You've chosen rebellion. I love my empire, but am I going to hang imperial propaganda in my living room? Probably not.
Yeah, we saw one of those, imperial ones at, I think at San Diego Comic-Con, my wife and I, and she was like, that's beautiful. I love it. We can't put that in our home. I'm not going to advertise to join the empire in my home.
So true. Final story of the day. This is probably, and I'm slightly joking here, not meaning to be snarky, but I think like the fifth or sixth time we've run a story on this upcoming book. Clone Wars, Stories of Light and Dark. We're really looking forward to this book here at Force Center. And the authors and their stories have been revealed. Let me just run through the list here. Lou Anders, writing two, Dooku Captured and the Gungan General. Preti Shehibber, A Hostage Crisis. Zoraida Cordova, The Lost Night Sister. Jason Fry, Sharing the Same Face. Rebecca Roanhorse, Dark Vengeance. Greg Van Eekhout, Kenobi's Shadow. Tom Engelberger, Bane's Story. E. Ann Covery, Bug. Sarah Beth Durst, Almost a Jedi. Yun-Ha Lee, The Shadow of Umbara. And Ann Ursa, Pursuit of Peace. So these are all based or sometimes just direct kind of retellings from another point of view of some of the episodes, or they're based on some of the bigger episodes. So a lot of these are either the same title or connect to what they're about. So what stories have our attention now, Joseph?
Yeah, I was really thrilled to finally hear which stories, and there are a ton of my favorite stories. The Jason Fry one, Sharing the Same Face, is based on Ambush, the first just in release order, regular episode of Clone Wars where Yoda, you know, tells the clones that they are all unique in the Force. And like, what a great way to kick off the Clone Wars. It's in some great Yoda philosophy in there, so I'm really excited about that. Really enjoyed Rebecca Roanhorse's other Star Wars work, so I'm very interested in Dark Vengeance. Sarah Beth Durst, Almost a Jedi, based on the great Gathering series where we meet all of the younglings building their lightsabers, and then they, you know, get into big trouble with Hondo. Super excited about that. But my number one, I don't know the author at all, Greg Van Eekhout, but Kenobi's Shadow is based on one of my favorite moments in the Clone Wars, and one of my, you know, people sometimes ask us about inspiring moments. It's one of my key Star Wars inspiring moments of, you know, spoilers for Clone Wars, when Maul kills Satine and expects Obi-Wan to break. And he's just like, no, that's the whole thing. Of course I want to kill you. You just killed someone I love. But this is why the light side is stronger. And this is why the darkness is weak. It's the weakest, easiest thing to do to lash out in anger. And it's the last thing Satine would want. So I'm not going to do it. And it sounds like the story is building up, like, how much was he tempted in that moment? What built up to that? And I'm really excited and a little nervous because I'm such a Kenobi obsessive about how that gets handled.
Understood. It's like when your favorite little band suddenly becomes a headlining act. You're like, this is my moment. This is my band. Though, hey, Kenobi's pretty popular.
He's everybody's band.
Yeah, exactly. He's everyone's band. Some of the ones that are grabbing my attention, Lou Anders, the Gungan general. Give me some Jar Jar stuff here, right? Give me a little bit more. I'm interested in that. Zoraida Cordova's The Lost Night Sister, Rebecca Roanhorse's Dark Vengeance. I like those ones as well. I am intrigued by Tom Engelberger and Bane's story. And this is based on the episode Deception, Friends and Enemies, The Box, and Crisis on Naboo. So this to me is kind of, all right, we want more Bane stuff, Cad Bane. We all hear that. You probably agree on some level. I love that character. So this is one of those like, all right, here you go. You got more. How's it going to work? And is it going to translate? I'm not challenging Tom as a writer. I don't know him. I don't, I'm just really excited to see how this can, how it can work. More Cad Bane. That's something a lot of people want.
Yeah, yeah, we're all pro Bane here.
Pro Bane. So that's, but I'm looking forward to all of them as well. What do you think about this as we get really close to this book released on August 25th? Is the plan, being so tied to the episodes and the moments we already know? I cite the Kenobi one specifically to you, as it could be like, oh my god, wow. New context, or just makes that scene better, or it could be at odds with. Even with our speculation being very responsible around these parts, it could be at odds. It runs that risk. And is the risk going to be worth the reward for you?
Oh, yeah, because I think it is a healthy letting go because, you know, let's say I read it and like, I'm not sure about it at first because maybe I had, you know, some different headcanon for Kenobi. Mm-hmm. It's always a thing, a good exercise then to read it again and maybe, you know, try to put my headcanon away and see it again in a new light. And even if I'm like, I'm not sure, this is the thing is we can really have fun as Star Wars fans with canon. But I think it's also a good exercise to just go, that motivation doesn't track for me. And it's one story. I don't need to believe it if I don't want to as a fan.
Yeah. Yep. That's called reading from a certain point of view.
Yeah, yeah. And I sound overly, I'm not staying up at night no. Worried about this one Kenobi story. I think it's a really cool idea, this whole book, too.
Yep.
Instead of writing new stories and finding new conflicts to bring out these same emotions and details from characters, it's really cool to say, well, let's really focus on this character in a story where they have this kind of really interesting pivotal conflict to who they are as a character. And just spend some time in their head is a really interesting approach rather than just coming up with a new story to kind of repeat the same conflict.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And I, you know, risk reward. I definitely think it's always going to end up being a bigger reward. And we're going to review Queen's Peril on Thursday. And I think that's a great example of let's go into some familiar territory and look around the corners, and it can work really, really well. That is a look at the Star Wars news for now. We'll see what is updated the moment we press publish on this episode. Before we take a quick break and on the other side of it, look at Jedi Temple Challenge and take your questions. We are going to have our Force Center recommends an audiobook we think you should try out on us. Joseph, what do we have this week?
we are recommending Alphabet Squadron Shadowfall by Alexander Freed. That is the next book coming up that we will get to reading and reviewing. So if you want to be on board with us and listening at the same time we're reading, you can check it out.
And to download Shadowfall or any free audiobook you want to try, go to audibletrial.com/4center. Again, that's audibletrial.com/4center for your free audiobook. All right, we're going to take a quick break. On the other side, we're going to learn some lessons from Jedi Temple Challenge and take some questions from all of you. We'll see you on the other side.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Life is full of what ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, 4Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, 4Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to jennylanda.com. That's JENILANDA.com for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as Jennifer Landa 1138. Hey, Force Center fans, don't forget Force Center is on YouTube. Head over there to catch up with our new show, Star Wars Show and Tell. Joseph, Jennifer, Ken, and special guests sit down and share favorite items from their own Star Wars memorabilia collections. Plus, there's the In Memoriam video series, encore presentations of Databank Brawl, and special programming all there for you, and more shows on the way. It's Force Center on YouTube. Check it out. Welcome back to Force Center. I apologize for saying goodbye to you all in the first act. I hope you stuck around. I don't know. It's the old radio thing. Stick around. The other side of the break, we got Doobie Brothers coming up. See ya. So I apologize to Force Center. We're back, Joseph. We're going to get to the fan questions in a moment. We love taking a bit here to look at Jedi Temple Challenge. We enjoy this show. We enjoy this show's presence. And it's just kind of fun to... For me, sit down with a cup of coffee, some toast or bowl of cereal when it comes out, and just take myself back to being 10, 11, and 12, and what I wouldn't do to compete in this game. You know what I mean?
No, that sounds so wholesome. I watched this particular episode at, I think, 1 a.m. with a glass of whiskey, and I got so mad at the leap and lift.
Yes. Yes. I want to talk about that. Here's our teams. We always highlight our teams. Miguel and Kaylee, blue team. They both were 10, and they went on to the finals. Gigi and Skyla, orange. Oh, my heart was breaking for them in the second round. And Giovanni and Jaden, the purple team. I got to start with them, Joseph. We had a couple moments. We had Jaden screaming on the power pole, just frustration, just the pole. At one point, there was a great shot. I ain't making fun. Is Gio pulling up his pants? They were falling down, and he's like pulling them up in a challenge. And then we got Jaden hitting the wall several times on leap lift. To me, I thought, you know what? I love this purple team. Giovanni and Jaden, they're us fighting through life. You got to scream on that thing while you're pulling through it. You don't always look your best, and that's okay. Your pants are falling, and sometimes you want to get up and succeed and get over the top, but you're just going to keep hitting that wall. Joseph, did you find yourself in the purple team as well?
Oh, yeah, I absolutely did. I have swung straight into the wall many times in life. Wasn't it Giovanni and Jaden who laid out that one was the brains and one was the brawn?
Yes.
And then I think the one that was brawn was not helping as much on the push and pull. I was like, come on, guys.
Well,
you know your roles. Let's follow through on our strengths.
Know your roles. And to me, the highlighted lesson in this episode was listening. We saw it maybe hurt the blue team in the end. And I think maybe if Jade and Giovanni had listened to each other's strengths, they might have gotten through.
They were super charming. They were honestly like one of the most likable and just enthusiastic and fun teams. It was really cool to see them.
Yeah, no, I really was just not laughing at them at all. I just, when I saw Gio pull up his pants, I was like, this kid's me. I go, this is what my experience, and I've talked a lot, like the leap and lift would be real tough for me then, now, and forever. And I just, when they kept showing Jaden hitting the wall, I was like, that'd be me now at 44. It'd be me there in a 10, 11, 12. I feel for you, man. So I was moved.
Damn leap and lift. I see those short kids and I'm like, they're going to have a hard time on the leap and lift.
I will say, because Gigi and Skyla just breeze right through it. They got a height advantage. And look, I used to coach Little League Baseball, and I coached 9 through 12. That's the age group. So that's not some random thing I think they're doing here with Jedi Temple Challenge, right? Like it's, hey, that's generally considered, and even here they've gone up to 13 or 14. So I don't think that I have a huge problem with it. And by the way, I would never have a giant problem with Jedi Temple Challenge on the ages are off. No, I've coached teams and it is somewhat of a difference. A 9-year-old doing leap and lift and a 13-year-old doing leap and lift. I don't know. I might file a complaint with the Jedi Council.
It's not fair. The leap and lift is holding me back.
Yeah. What if I always like asking you and myself, like, if we were in this situation, whether it be now, whether it be then in our youth, what would we be? If Joseph, if we were a team or you just were competing with someone else, even engineer or pilot, what choice would you feel more comfortable with?
Absolutely pilot. The engineer looks cool, but the engineer can be more easily vexed by the actual physical world. It seemed like in this episode in particular, there are times where I think they knew the answer and they just couldn't find the damn prop.
Yes.
And I know that's how I'd be hung up of like, I know it's binders, but they're in the bottom of the box and all they got tangled up with the comlink and damn it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You and I are of the same mind, which means if we were on a team, we'd have to, draw death sticks to see who would be the pilot. Sitting down, concentrating. You're a little more zen. This is why, Mace and Yoda sit down to talk about the Force a lot. But engineer, I could do it, but I'm like you. Yeah, there'd be that time of like, you need to pull a tauntaun, and the only thing you can think of is an AT-ST. What is it? So, all right, we're of the same mind, which means we'll probably need to be on different teams.
Sad, but true.
But true. We'll have to ask Jennifer which one she wants to be. Final lessons here. Miguel and Kaylee, the blue team, they almost got there. They didn't get there, but they said, I believe it was Kaylee, said, if you lose, it's okay. And we talked about the competition angle of the show, nothing inherently wrong with that. But Joseph, there's bigger lessons beyond just winning. And this was a highlighted one. And they didn't fall to the dark side. And I thought that there'd every reason to speed things up, and they didn't. And it probably maybe even led to a defeat in this silly little fun game. But I thought it was a big lesson, man. They stayed pure even in defeat.
I was so happy with that because they had communicated so well in the in round two, and it had really given them an advantage. They'd been so supportive to one another, and it's awful to be an adult watching this. Like, I could see the strain getting to those kids. But in round three, I could see like, teamwork and listening is the way to go, but you're on the razor's edge. And I was so happy when they didn't give in to the dark side. I was so happy for them.
Yeah, I loved it. I really did. I loved it. This watching Jedi Temple Challenge is always fun. And we keep focused on Mary Holland and Ahmed Best as Keller and Beck. And, this week it was a little bit more the kids for me. So about five more episodes left for season one, at least. And it's been a journey. It's been a fun journey. Jedi Temple Challenge on Star Wars Kids. Check it out. Does it sound like advertising for it? Yeah, we are because we're Star Wars fans.
It's good Star Wars content. I love the Ewoks too. And you know what? This is a thing that I don't make a point of. So it was just great to see them. And I like the ambiguity in the story of they fended the Ewoks off. Like, how is that? Is that combat?
Yeah, actually, I was going to make a note. I actually forgot. I'm so glad you brought that up. Yeah, that was murder bears to the umpteenth degree there, right? Fierce, treated as fierce, and something happened. We don't know that fight, but it turns around good in the end because the Ewoks are, I think, by nature good. So
yeah, they are. They worked everything out.
Good stuff. From there, we are going to go to audience questions. We got some good ones here today. What do we got now, Joseph?
That is right. We always grab some questions from both social media and our great patrons on Patreon. So we're going to Twitter first. We got a question from Kyle or Keel. They say, what is your favorite planet from a galaxy far, far away and why? Ken, I always struggle with favorites. I struggle with even coming up with top five. So just one favorite. I don't know if I can do it, but do you have one favorite planet?
We're in the same boat. I literally have listed five planets. I'll tell you what, much like we do on Star Wars Show and Tell, some runner ups or Star Wars ranked, and I'll get to my answer. I'll choose from this crew: Naboo, Coruscant, the moon of Endor, since we want to be specific, Mustafar, and Hoth. Reason Hoth is a little solitude and cold. I can dig that. My favorite planet, I still might go to Coruscant. I've been, and that answers, you know, where do you want to live in Star Wars, or where do you want to take a vacation in Star Wars? Those fun questions pop up a lot. Naboo is for me an answer all the time, and I love learning more of the history of Naboo, especially in some of the E.K. Johnston books. Really do love it. Coruscant, just it's that urban living, that urban sprawl. I'm fascinated of who was the first person to say, well, we need like a second level. What do you think? I'm intrigued by it. There's big lessons there. Dexter's Diner. The fact that Sabe from the Queen's Handmaiden, when she moves to Coruscant, gets an apartment and it's near Dexter's Diner, like speaks to me. Like I'm all about it. I'm intrigued by Mustafar. The more we learn about it, like his history, the different aspects of it, when it pops up in the movies and shows, love it. But I'll say Joseph Coruscant.
Wow. Wow. This is great. We're going to save some time because we have very similar lists.
Yeah.
Hoth is a great planet, but living for many years in Minnesota during the winter, I have lived on Hoth. I know that experience. It's enjoyable. True. I've acted it out. I have fallen in the snow just like Luke. I've not been attacked by Wampa. Also, Naboo. Naboo is not only just beautiful, it's always highest on the list when people ask us, where would you live? But I love the design of it. I love how much imagination goes into it. It pops up in E.K. Johnston's novels, obviously, Queen's Shadow and Queen's Peril. But the Gungan society, how it overlaps with the Naboo society, you know, the beautiful lake country, all that. There's so much to speak for Naboo. Mustafar is high for me because in some ways it's the most over the top planet. It is. It's one of the planets that really reminds you of like, this is still a pulpy adventure serial. Where did the guy go evil? Yeah. On the volcano planet. That's just a basically screaming open wound in the galaxy. That's where he went evil. Yeah. So the design and every time it's popped up in canon, it's really exciting. So I often think Mustafar first. I'll put Octo up there as kind of the real opposite of Mustafar, of a place that feels very, peaceful and like a very light side planet. As a fan of the light side, I think I'm drawn to Octo. Bespin is not a planet, but Cloud City is probably my favorite place in all of Star Wars. Because it fires my imagination and the different contrasting designs from the beautiful kind of art deco hallways to the carbon freezing chamber, all that. But number one, you and I are in agreement. If I have to pick one, it's Coruscant because it has just a richness of stories. You know, if you go to that kind of private investigator noir storytelling, you know, the city that never sleeps, the city with a thousand stories. This is a city of billions and billions of stories at all different levels, all different time periods. I am hungry for more Coruscant storytelling. I would take Coruscant the novel, just a 1,000-page history of Coruscant.
You could do that. I mean, you could do those kind of the history of it. You could do 22 stories of Coruscant. You could do all of that stuff.
Yeah, it is just the best. Dexter's Diner is just the beginning.
Yeah, and look, shout out to Timothy Zahn for bringing that into the Star Wars galaxy. Been kind of fascinated with it and hot chocolate in Star Wars ever since.
That's right. I would not maybe read that book, just to do a tiny bit of dark side negativity. I would not read the hot chocolate book. I'm sorry. I'm a monster. We are going to move on then to Broom Kid. Here's what I don't think it's the real Broom Kid. That would be great. But here's what Broom Kid has to say and ask. The ending of episode 9 seems open ended. What are your thoughts and feelings on the world that is on the horizon? Personally, I would love to see more of the adventure ahead for Rey and the Star Wars universe. We've talked about this a decent amount. There's a lot of our listeners who are really excited to see more about what's next for Rey and Poe and Finn and Rose and Janna and Lando and the whole galaxy right there. Ken, what are your feelings on the fact that it is open-ended, and what do you imagine for the galaxy?
I love the open-ended nature. It just made sense, right, in a lot of different ways of the road is open and it could be paved any way that these characters want it now. I thought that was good. And this is just kind of a summary because you said we've talked about it in some other places, and I'm sure we'll talk about it again, maybe even more formalized capacity. To me, the general thought is that there's always a bigger fish. I believe this is kind of the beginning, the fourth age of a Middle Earth in Star Wars, a true turning of the page, if you will. And well, it's not, not necessarily return to the High Republic, but I foresee like a new era of exploration, growth, a chance to rebuild a stronger foundation, because by now the galaxy knows that great evil can return, at least we hope. And the idea of this was an actual victory of the people, we've talked about that big theme in Rise of Skywalker versus more of a military victory in Return of the Jedi, which does not take away from Return of the Jedi one. I just love, and I think we all kind of agree, we did love this idea of following Return of the Jedi. It wasn't all, fireworks and Ewok dances. Like, they struggled, and there was problems and government issues and old themes and old struggles return. You could maybe see where now there's more of a sense of a complete victory for the people. They could go forward. As far as Rey, I'll focus on that. There's a lot of characters to focus on, obviously. You talk about Lando and Janna. That could be a mission of healing, mission of self-discovery. That's powerful stuff to me, too. But Rey, to me, I see Rey slowly finding her way to teaching new Jedi and teaching what she knows. And I kind of believe in the concept and like the concept of a theory of a new Jedi. And that Finn can be a part of that, part of this new model. That's not a gray Jedi. It's not a necessary rage Jedi. But just kind of, taking all aspects. Those books are gone. But what we have, all we need is in our hands. And I like Rey kind of going forth when she's ready. When she's ready. Maybe that's part of it too. Like, I'm not going to dive right into this. I'm going to spend some time on my own skin around the galaxy.
Yeah. Yeah. I really like all those ideas. I really like the idea presented in the novelization of Rise of Skywalker in terms of what is different about this victory. Well, this victory didn't come just from a small band of rebellion. This victory came from everyone in the galaxy choosing to show up, or, a large representation of the galaxy. So I like the idea of some new government being formed of like, great, we're not restoring anything. We're starting over again. And man, everybody, this can't just be the resistance people, but, we need buy-in from as many people as possible. Within that, I like the idea that, maybe there'd be a cry for Poe to be the chancellor, but I don't think that's Poe's thing. I think that's Larma Daisy. I think Larma Daisy is the chancellor in my head canon. And then I think there's been such a journey of these characters about finding one another for the main characters, in particular with Rey wanting to accept her own power and her own agency, but also wanting to feel belonging. And I kind of like the idea of, yeah, Rey's not just going to race forward and go, where am I going to put my Jedi training, school? That maybe she's going to travel around with Finn, and maybe even with Poe, maybe with Rose. I think Rose is busy in the government, too. But I like the idea that they stay together, and there's got to be a lot of damage from this world, from this war, and from all of the buildup from the First Order. And maybe they're just going around helping people and just, staying together and getting to see the galaxy, which I think both Rey and Finn certainly want to do, bonding a little bit. And for Rey's just kind of Jedi philosophy, one of the things I've really been appreciating that's in the movies for Rey is because of her experience, knowing what it's like to be abandoned and alone, her instinct is to help people. She doesn't have to rescue BB-8. It's like the first thing we see her do practically. Right. He's being bullied by Tito, and she helps him. And I feel like that theme gets played out in Rise of Skywalker, that's her instinct to help the Vexus, to help Dio, to be kind to him. And I think her just taking that of like, well, that's who I've always been. And at the core of the Jedi, when it really, really works, it's just about helping anyone. Like the way Ahsoka discovers of, it's just about when somebody needs help, I'm going to go help them. And I really like the idea of her just like, I'm going around the galaxy trying to kind of help where I can. And if I find somebody who's force sensitive and they want to be trained, I'll pass it on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Let's write these stories.
It is really exciting. And it's so exciting that so many fans are excited to hear those stories. And, given the nature of Star Wars, I think in some form, in some way, eventually they will be told, right?
Yeah, The Republic Reborn, a Star Wars story.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's great. I like it. You got go title.
That's all I got.
Any further thoughts on that, or should we move on?
No, I mean, that's we might dig into that a little bit more juicy, in a juicier level, a juicier way, a squishy, juicy lemon of an episode down the line.
The juicy level is my favorite level of Coruscant.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's level 13 of 10.
It's a thing of beauty. We're going to move on then to Patreon. This comes from a listener and podcaster himself, Alden Diaz. Alden says, with the news that Star Wars Battlefront 2 is ceasing new content, which is definitely more real-world business climate related than actually Battlefront related, I've been thinking a lot about endings. For some reason that I can't explain, no more new in the game really bummed me out more than I expected. Maybe it's because they put so much care into it. Maybe it's because I looked forward to the game as an escape during quarantine. In any case, maybe I just need some Star Wars counseling, but it made me want to ask, what are the Star Wars endings that hit the hardest or the most complex for you? Doesn't even need to be in story. It could be the ending of a figure line or something like that. For me, it'd be the end of Rebels. Great thoughts on the sometimes just emotional trauma of a part of Star Wars ending. Ken, when you reflect on all the various endings of Star Wars, what's where the one where you've been affected the most?
Well, I'll tell you what, Alden, he always contributes great questions and makes sense that he has a great show, Octo Radio, which I love that concept. It's just Luke on an island talking to himself. So I ran through the list because I was like, as you were getting to this question, I was like, okay, I got, and then when it was like, hey, it can be outside the story, I was like, oh, I got that one. I'll start there. Mighty Mugs. it's a toy that if you've ever been at a convention with me, as you have, Joseph, I do a great bit of searching for Mighty Mugs that I didn't get to. They were the precursor to Funko Pops. They were a little bit bigger, bolder, vital, great packaging. I think even similar to the Funko Pops, which again, I was always pulled in by Funko Pops, by the packaging more than anything. It's why one of the reasons I don't take a lot of them out. I like the packaging. Mighty Mugs were there. And this was even during that weird era, mid 2000s, late 2000s. I can't remember when the reign of the Mighty Mugs was, but I need toys for my Star Wars podcast set. It wasn't, oh, I'm free to do this again. We got new movies and I'm reliving my past. It was like me and my roommate buying Mighty Mugs because they had G.I. Joe and Transformers and Star Wars. And it was like a first wave of, hey, remember those things you loved as a kid? They have power again.
Like, yeah.
And it was kind of exciting. Like he'd come back, we lived together and he'd come back from like Target or something. Like, oh my God, dude, I got the Cobra Commander Mighty Mug. And so I started going and get the Star Wars ones. And that was it wasn't like the late 80s, you know, 1990, 91, 92 dark time of Star Wars where it was this thing of this past, so to speak. It was Star Wars, the post prequel era. Clone Wars was going, but it was just like that, like, this is fun. I can buy Star Wars toys again. And then poof, it was gone. Mighty Mugs gone. It kind of broke me a little.
Yeah. Consumed by the Funko Pops. Almost, you could almost watch it happen on convention floors. We're like, hey, there's some Mighty Mugs. There's some Funko Pops. So the Funko Pops have devoured.
Yeah.
The Mighty Mugs. They are gone.
And I didn't immediately switch over to Funko Pops because of that. I was like, yeah, I like the Mighty Mugs better. So that's that for me. And then quickly, I'll say this, Revenge of the Sith, just 2005, seeing Beru and Owen and Luke and the sunsets and going, well, that's it. Okay. And that's not a like the prequels or not thing. That was just as a fan going, all right, I didn't think we'd ever get to six movies. We did. And there you go. Okay. Now what?
Yeah.
And you accept it and looking back. And then plus, you know, you're still got a lot of, well, those sucked. Kind of thoughts. So it was like, well, did that end the way I wanted it to end? I don't know. So it was layered, complex as Alden writes. I was there for that. And then this one, and I won't spend time on it because we've talked about it and we'll talk about it again. The death of Luke Skywalker. It's easy to listen to Force Center or follow you and me around social media, Joseph, and say, well, those are some positive Star Wars fans. Nah, like I liked Last Jedi. I immediately took to that movie, but had a process of things. And one of them was Luke's death. And it was this, was I ready for it that I needed? It was hard. Did it fit? Is that the story? And rewatching the director and the Jedi, as I said, up top of the show, when they get to that part of some of the moments where Hamill's fundamentally disagree, Rian Johnson saying like, I had to ask myself, I doubted myself. Is this what's right? A lot of people will tweet, no. But you know, at the moment coming out of the first screening, I was like, that's some complex layered questions and feelings about this. At the end of the day, I came to this, that was the beautiful ending I didn't know I needed for that character. So that's an ending that got me.
Yeah. Oh, those are all great. All great, insightful ones. Yeah. The main thing I remember from that first screening of Last Jedi is so loving Luke's pacifist victory and coming up with that creative solution of force projecting a crate. But I still had the like, but I don't want him to go. I think I accepted it quite quickly, because even to this day, like, I think we got a question coming up soon about this that I earmarked to add to the main show soon, of like, well, how did you cope with Luke's death? And like, at this point, yes, he leaves his plane, but it's he's moving on to the next part of his adventure. You know, he's not gone. He's with us always, kind of thing. So that was an ending that helped me process endings for sure.
Yeah.
And helped me accept some of the Star Wars ideas of letting go. Man, the Mighty Mugs are so great. Was it Tarkin that you were looking for a while?
Tarkin, yeah. Were you and I going around some convention floors looking for some?
Yeah, I think it was when we were in Vegas, or maybe it was at LA Comic Con, back when Stanley Kamikaze, and I was stopping every 5 feet to look at an old Power of the Force action figure, and you were looking for Tarkin Mighty Mugs. And I remember the next couple conventions I went to, I would take a spin looking for a Tarkin Mighty Mug.
Yeah, I think so. There was a couple others, old pal, I haven't talked to him in years, but Chris Stuckman over this Chris Stuckman YouTube channel. We were traveling around a couple conventions at one point, and he found the Emperor's Royal Guard Mighty Mug and sent that to me as a gift.
This is, oh, wow.
Years ago now. Still have it. They're all at my storage shed, baking in the sun. But actually, they're quite safe. I check daily. But yeah, that Tarkin one. I remember that. That search.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the search will go on for the Tarkin Mighty Mug. For myself, for endings, Revenge of the Sith was bittersweet, because I had gone through the, like, it's amazing that these are even happening, the explosion of Star Wars everywhere, and then the backlash of, you know, people my own age who, you know, were really hard on the prequels or disliked them. You know, I had my critiques, but at that point I loved Revenge of the Sith, and thought about it all the time. And it was this really bittersweet thing of like, well, it feels really complete. It really locks up, you know, all this poetry between Anakin's journey and Luke's journey, and it brings us right back to the beginning. And it felt like Owen and Brew looking out, you know, at the twin sons. It was like, well, it came back, and maybe someday in the far future, maybe George Lucas will let other people tell Star Wars stories on the big screen someday, but, you know, maybe not, you know, maybe, you know, 50, 60 years from now, that'll happen. So it's very bittersweet. But by far the biggest, most difficult Star Wars ending for me was just learning that endings existed, pretty much. Return of the Jedi came out, and I got like, oh yeah, it's a trilogy. You know, I had learned that word and said, oh, there's not going to be another movie yet. Maybe someday. And I'd heard that, oh, it's 9 movies, it's 12 movies. But then, so there was the movie came out and ended, and I wasn't able to fully process, like, but how many years until the next one? It was as the Return of the Jedi figures slowly disappeared from stores, which was happening at the exact same time that, you know, my brother was 3 years older than me, and I can't remember if somebody just told it to me as a fact, or I just picked it up as cultural knowledge that eventually you will grow up and you won't want to play with action figures. And that was just insanity to me. And I knew that it was going to happen to my brother, but I couldn't process how would that happen ever. Like, it wasn't like, is it just going to be like one day, like just one day he goes to sixth grade and that's it? And that's the day where he no longer likes action figures.
Right.
And I was having to kind of go through that, like, that's allegedly going to happen to me. I don't want that to happen to me. I'm going to resist that. I'm going to play with Star Wars action figures forever. I can only find Prune Face at Walgreens, and that's it. And there, Star Wars is gone. It's just me clinging to, you know, Prune Face at a Kmart, maybe. That was really weird, because it was the first time I had to process that things, big cultural things, go away.
Yeah. And you just had to wait for Bendham's. You just were waiting for Bendham's.
I was waiting for Bendham's. You know, I had, you know, some, you know, I dabbled in some other action figure lines that were not as as fulfilling. But then, you know, I quickly realized, like, oh, it's still fun to collect them even if you don't play with them. And then the action figure love never, ever stopped.
Never stopped. Doesn't have to stop.
No. That is a great question from Alden. Great way to reflect on all of the endings of Star Wars that have happened and will keep happening, both in big and small ways. We're going to move on to our final question from Tim Van Newland. Tim says, the Siege of Mandalore arc really was a movie instead of four episodes. I really want to see these kinds of animated movies for Star Wars, fully scored by Kevin Kiner, of course. What do you guys think about animated movies like this last Clone Wars arc for Disney Plus? This is something we've kind of talked about before, but I think Siege of Mandalore really put that in people's imaginations. How are you feeling these days, Ken? Do you like the idea of just suddenly there's a one-shot animated film with, you know, that level of quality that we all saw in Siege of Mandalore that's an exclusive on Disney Plus?
Gimme, gimme, gimme. That's where I'm at with it. And I'm so glad this question comes out of the Siege of Mandalore arc, because that I was convinced before, right? We talked about it, and I've brought up the Game of Thrones histories and lores special features on the Blu-rays and DVDs that are animated and kind of these documentary things, and being like, I'd love like something for that in Star Wars and that kind of stuff. But yeah, that was, I mean, Clone Wars has always been kind of written and conceived as a movie, as Filoni will tell you. So it made sense, but it felt like a movie. And I remember some of the opening moments when they're on that bridge. I'm like, man, I mean, if I was 9 and this scene Star Wars for the first time, this would be just as powerful as any other thing in Star Wars that I saw for the first time or early viewings. So it did make me think, what are the possibilities? I would love to, and because it's something, Siege of Mandalore, something we knew about, but now finally got to see, I don't know, like seeing the Battle of Jakku, all the parts that we know of. I keep talking about, like, do you take a lot of these with modern canon expanding or adding stuff to these things we know? Can you put it all in one bucket? And an animated Battle of Jakku, where you have Iden Versio and her father and that storyline, and Shriv and Delmico, and you have Wedge and Snap, and you have some Battlefront 2 or Battlefront 1, actually, when they added it to the game, Lost Stars. You have all these things that you could put into it. That we know of the Battle of Jakku, and I'm sure Star Wars Squadrons is probably going to unveil some things. It just has that feeling. It's working towards that. Ray Sloan and all the stuff going on at the end of it all. Could you put that all into one animated movie where it's like, yeah, hey, we know a lot of this, but to see it play out like that in one story, man, I almost can't talk about it because I want it too much.
Is it tormenting you in your very soul?
It is. We're not going to see it.
Yeah. I don't know. I think I've long been interested in this idea. We have talked about it. I think there's, you know, other similar things in different media. It's a strong line for DC of doing these animated movies. A lot of them are adaptations of famous comic book arcs, but there's this own kind of just standalone thing, and they get, you know, great voice actors, and they must make money because they've been making them like mad. And it really makes sense to me for Star Wars, particularly now when animation is really ramping up because it's the thing that can be done right now. Mm-hmm. I also think there's some power to, there are lots of stories in Star Wars where, yeah, it'd be great to do a TV show or, you know, an animated TV show. But there's a lot of things that just lend itself really well to a one-shot animated film to just really make the emotional stakes high, make the action stakes high the way they are in Siege of Mandalore, have them be specific event-based. You could do a whole Battle of series, right? You could let's see the Battle of Chiron Belt, right? Let's see the Battle of T'Nab. Your Battle of Jakku is just such a, oh man, that's a great idea. But I think there is value in, like, what Disney Plus is doing this these next couple of weeks is they're releasing things on the weekend and making them events. And that worked super well for Hamilton, partially because it was the 4th of July weekend, and obviously it's an insanely popular thing. But they're doing that as a new X-Men is coming to the service, X-Men movie. As Solo is coming, they're putting out press releases like, this is the weekend where Solo drops, so maybe check it out. I can see that this could be a real subscription driver, right?
Yeah, right.
And it has the possibility of getting some of the, not that there aren't a ton of amazing voice actors, but it has the possibility of getting some of the marquee people involved who maybe don't want to do a 6-season animated series, but would come in and do a movie. Like, if you wrote just a great adventure of Jedi Master Luke Skywalker and young Ben Solo, could you actually get Mark Hamill and Adam Driver to voice this one movie that really captures a lot about their relationship, but still feels like this great adventure in this sort of, you know, unexplored golden time period, and then release that on Disney Plus as like a marquee event of like, this is going to be released, you know, on this Saturday in, you know, next July, and you need to sign up for Disney Plus for this absolute event film, this one-shot event animated film.
I'm on board. Can we give ourselves Go Picture on this one?
I think we got Go Picture, Ken. I think we're going to imagine this a ton. I think it's slightly more realistic right now. Maybe not my fantasy of Mark Hamill and Adam Driver doing Jedi Master and young Ben, but yeah, some others. Your Battle of Jakku idea is really juicy.
It's good because the lore of that battle continues to grow, and I just was pulled into that story from the moment I saw the Graveyard of Giants that Rey was scavenging in. You know, it's like, wow, what a great battle, and oh, it's a new battle. Oh, okay, wow, something I hadn't heard about before. So yeah, just your imagination starts stirring. So we'll see. Jakku, the last stand of the rebellion, coming.
I love it. Also throw out my regular pitch for Kira versus Maul, Crimson Dawn, Crimson Dawn.
Yeah, that's just, we put that in a bulletin board and keep it there. It's like a Hall of Fame induction.
That's right. Hall of Fame induction that I'll probably still mention every time. But that's it for our questions. There's some great have fun and nerd out about what Star Wars stories we want to hear, our favorite planet, and some deeper stuff about the future of our heroes and the endings of Star Wars in the real world. Thanks to Tim Alden, Broom Kid, and Kyle. That is our questions for the week. We got a lot more great questions that will be coming up next week and the weeks beyond.
And I love breaking up the main show and really getting a chance to dive into some of these stories and questions. It's worked out for us. I hope it continues to work out for all of you out there. If you want to follow us on Twitter, you can do so at Force Center Pod. Use the hashtag Force Center. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. We are on Instagram and YouTube as well. The Tally Lintra In Memoriam was just released last week. I challenged Kevin Smets. I said, I'm going to write an In Memoriam for a character that's on screen for about 20 seconds. You got to find something. And he came through with flying colors. And our Force Center Show and Tells, we got some special guests coming up soon on that one. So go to YouTube, subscribe there. Podcasts available on Anchor, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and more. We have merch at tpublic.com/user/Force Center. We also are on Patreon, where you can support us over there at patreon.com/Force Center. And we appreciate your support over there. Choose a tier that best fits your desires of support. We also got our own things going on, even though, as Joseph has mentioned a few times, the industry, it's a weird time to try to be doing stuff professionally in this industry where you can't be in the same room. But we're trying nonetheless. We got things going on. Joseph, where can they find you?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Joseph Scrimshaw, and you can go to my website at Joseph Scrimshaw for links to comedy albums and my other podcast, Obsessed. This last week, my wife and I did an episode about masks, and I have to say, I did a great job containing myself by only talking about Star Wars a little bit, but Ken, we might need to do a masks in Star Wars episode. It was a real fun conversation, not only with all of the discussion of masks now, but like, it's such a rich cultural pop culture genre conversation about what do masks mean to us. So I had a lot of fun with that. We're also trying to be aware of the real world and plug some ways that you can help. This week, I would like to plug the GoFundMe for the Navajo Nation and Hopi Reservation. These are communities that are being affected very badly by the virus, and this GoFundMe is to help the vulnerable communities within that community. So you can find it by going to GoFundMe and or just Googling GoFundMe Navajo Nation, and it will pop right up.
That is great stuff. And you can follow me at Ked Knapsack or Morning Drive Media, M Drive Media, and go to kednapsack.com. And there I have a charity spotlight tab, and I want to highlight the one today from actually recommended from a Patreon supporter, but also a great Force Center listener. All Force Center listeners are great, but Kai's been around for a long time. Kai Thatch actually recommended this one to me. It's listed on the page. It's the Peace Fund. It is a they have a threefold mission to protect, educate, and aid children. There are in extraordinary difficult circumstances, from bringing clean water to villages to donations of tablets to students in Los Angeles. There's a lot going on. You can check it out at thepeacefund.org. And thanks to Kai Thatch for bringing it to our attention. So check it out if you want at kednapsack.com to link to all the appropriate pages. That is it for this week. Well, this day, we got the main show part two, so to speak, on Thursday. The Superstar Destroyer has a second level, and it is like an RV. You can go take a nap up top. Now, we got a great episode. Just really excited to get to it. It is Queen's Peril, E.K. Johnston's new Padme-centric and Handmaiden-centric novel. And we're going to dive in like we do here on Force Center this coming Thursday. So that is it for now. We'll see you next time. Now I can say goodbye. This was Force Center.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us.
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.